This message is part of the educational ministry of Columbia International University. We've been preparing world Christians to know Him and to make Him known since 1923.
I know that many of you, our speaker that was here yesterday was kind of acknowledging this. Some of you are headed to the mission field. You're interested in the ministry, what we call professional ministers. And so that ministry is kind of where you're going. Others we call ministering professionals. So you're looking at the marketplace, something business, that kind of stuff. How many of you are there out there that are interested in that? You're thinking, I'm going to be in the business place. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but I think that's where I'm headed, doing something like that. All right. So I want you to think with me. So picture this. All right. So you get a job with a company. You're there for several years. You absolutely love your job. It's great. It's been a great fit. You love the people that you work with. You feel like you've been doing pretty good at your job. You're just kind of plugged in there. You like your boss. Everything about your job just seems to be happy, happy. And so you're just enjoying what God has called you to do. That one popped up randomly in Google Images, and so I got to include that one. So you're just kind of in a sweet spot. You love what you're doing. And then you find out your boss is leaving the company. And so several things start to go on in your mind. Well, I wonder why he or she's leaving. Is there something bad going on that I don't know about? What's up? And then you start thinking, you know, I love this place, and I've been here for a few years. I think I could do that job. Well, I wonder. And so your mind is just kind of racing through that. And so you're kind of wondering what's going on. So you're just going about doing your stuff. And a few people start, you know, you're at the water fountain, you know, the conversation place or whatever it is. And someone says, hey, so-and-so's leaving. Are you thinking about applying for that job? I think you'd do pretty good at that job. And you start hearing that in a couple different places. And you're like, whoa, what's going on here? And so you're like, Lord, what's up? I'm not sure. And so you get those people around you that are significant to you, and you start asking them to pray and, hey, give me some feedback on this. What do you think? And you pray, and you're like, okay. And you go for it. And you put in your app. And so you're waiting. You know, you've got to go through the HR process and all that kind of stuff. And you're thinking, well, I wonder what's going to happen. And then your boss's boss calls you and says, hey, saw your application the other day that you're interested in the position. Can we get together and do lunch? And you're thinking, sweet, let's do it. So you go out and you sit down together, and they start off and they're telling you, man, you've done this. You've just really grown into this place and you've been doing well. We appreciate that. But we're not going to be considering your application for the position. Oh, man. All the wind is out of your sails. What am I going to do? Everything. You know, you've just been geared up to that. You haven't been presumptuous necessarily, but you know what it's like. You kind of get your mind engaged in that. You think, wow, I might be there. All of that happens. What would you do? Well, it wasn't lunch, but it was breakfast, and it was a lizard thicket on Broad River Road where one of the vice presidents at CIU told me that. The dean of students at the time was moving on. I was interested in the position. Some people had encouraged me to think about it, thought I'd do good at it. And so we went there for breakfast, and that's what he told me. We're not going to be considering your application. Wow, that was tough. That was right at the start of the year 2000, and it really sent me into a tailspin. Now, obviously, something happened. I had to hire Lefty and Guido to knock a few people off, and that's where I am today. We'll come back to that a little bit, but what I had to do is I had to regroup, and I had to think about my life. Where am I? What am I doing? Frankly, Dr. Enlow was the person that was there, and he said, so what do you think you'll be doing? And I told him, frankly, I think I'm leaving. there's not another position for me. I'm not really a faculty person. This is what I like to do. I have no clue where I'll be going, but eventually, not immediately, I'm probably going to be leaving. So I went back, obviously talked with Patty. Kids were very little at the time. What am I going to do? Lord, you did this. So help me get to the next page. What's going on? Well, I had to start looking at things in context. And that's what I want to talk to us about. At the end of the message, we're going to sing the song, When I Survey the Wondrous Cross. We don't sing a lot of hymns anymore, which is kind of a bummer. I love some of the new choruses, but some of the hymns have such incredible truth, some powerful teaching, and this is a song that does that. I'm going to sing these lines. When I survey the wondrous cross on which the Prince of Glory died, my richest gain I count but loss and pour contempt on all my pride. Well, there's a good verse to be singing in the situation. You know, I'd kind of gotten myself up for the position and all that stuff. And God says, I want you to survey the cross. I want you to start looking at your life in context of the cross. Because when we start looking at our life in context of the cross, every single thing changes. We're going to come back to that, but the first three words there, I want you to just think about as we go through the message. Surveying the cross, looking at your life in context of the cross. Everything changes, as I said. The good things, they get better. You get perspective. The bad things, there's perspective. The discouraging things, we begin to see hope in the midst of those things. So I had to step back after that wonderful breakfast at Lizard Thicket and say, what's up, God? What's going on? Well, the passage I want to look at is very intimidating because I feel like I have absolutely no business at this place talking on this passage, but it's Matthew 28, 18 through 20. The Great Commission. I'm not qualified. I'm not a missionary statesman. I'm not a missiologist. I've gone overseas. I've lived overseas, and I've done those types of things. But this is a deep passage, and I feel like you need to have some street cred before you start passing on the stuff that's there. So real quick, let's look at the guts of the verse, and that's not what I'm going to emphasize, but let's just look at it. First of all, we know that there's a command that's in there. There's an imperative, make disciples. That's the main verb within all of that. It's participle. It's an aorist active imperative. It just means, doesn't have this defined time. It's just kind of this, make disciples. But before that is the go. And the go is an aorist passive participle, and it acts like an antecedent to the main verb, which means this is something that's kind of been going on before the main verb. It's kind of in existence, and that's the go. So the go part of it is, as you're going, you need to be going. But as you're going, make disciples. And then after that, there's two more participles that kind of complement that one. Baptize them and teach them. And so we're supposed to be doing this stuff. You're going to be going. The one thing it doesn't emphasize in there, it doesn't say where. And I'm not here to tell you where to go. I just know that you're going to be going. And as you go, here's some things that you need to do. So there's the sermon on the guts. But let's back up and just ask the question, why? Why go? Why make disciples? Why baptize? Why teach? Hop back to me. When I surveyed my situation, I felt lost. I was uncertain of the future, wasn't sure of my next steps, and to be honest with you, I was a little bit devastated. My ego took a blow, which was probably not a bad thing. I felt like I was a growing leader. I feel like I'd done pretty good, and I was ready to take the next step. So what happens when you're going, and then God changes your course? What's fair about that? If he's prepping you for something, and it seems like the natural flow of things, why change things? Well, I had the opportunity to look at it in the context of the cross. I did a little surveying that was there. And so over the next 3.5, 4 years, I got to work under two other people, Mary Bassesi who became just one of my closest friends and dearest colleagues at this place. She has gone up to be near her family in Cleveland, Ohio. But Miss Mary was a saint. She was a jewel to work with. She taught me a lot. She was very gifted administratively, and I appreciate that deeply. She came over to our house often on Thanksgivings, and we just enjoyed Miss Mary. She was great. And after that, life really took a downhill because I had to work under Dr. Beyer. He came down, and for 2 years plus, he was the dean of students. And if there is one thing that I would say he is gifted at, it is developing and cheerleading those that work around him. He saw my gifts, and he let me flow. I was working for him, but I couldn't tell that I was working for him. We were working together. And it was an incredible model for me. And probably unbeknownst to me, during that time, God was doing some tweaking and some redefining and shaping and equipping. And he used Mary and Brian to put me where he wanted me. Then Dr. Beyer was on sabbatical one semester, and there were some things that were going on in the university. We had a professor retire, Old Testament professor. I didn't know about it, but Dr. Enlow and Dr. Beyer had had some conversations, and he was going to go back to teaching. And I was sitting, I was kind of the acting dean of students while he was on sabbatical. We were sitting in one of the dining rooms up there, and we were having a meeting, and we were talking about all the transitions going on. Dr. Enlow hit the table, and he said, "I don't want to say this, but I got to say this. Brian Beyer is going to go back, teach in the seminary, and we'll be appointing Rick Swift as the dean of students." And I'm like, "What?" I'm like, "Aren't you the guy, like, we had breakfast, you know, two eggs and some bacon, you know, not looking at your app? You that guy?" God just absolutely blew my mind. But, you know, I went home and I was talking with Patty, and over the next few days, I began to think about the position, the scope of the responsibilities that was there, and I was like, "Oh, do I really want to do that?" You know, wrong time to ask the question, but I was like saying, "Wow, do I really want to do this?" And I was a little intimidated, and I was a little overwhelmed. Well, there's an analogy of this. I want us to take a look at Joshua. There's a story in Joshua. Joshua had taken over for Moses. I mean, are you kidding me? You know, the man is gone, and you're going to take over these million whatever people to just do a little small task, conquer the land. That's all you got to do. So Joshua 1 is replete with be strong and courageous, be strong and courageous, be strong and courageous. Why do you have to say that over and over to a person? Because they're weak and fearful. That seems to be logical there. I did some deep study and realized that you say that to someone because they're weak and fearful. So there's a lot of resonance for me at that time in my life to think about that. So here's the passage. So they're in the land, they're beginning their conquest, and they're about to go take Jericho. Awesome victory, major victory. But they're preparing for that. All of the Israelite men had been circumcised. Joshua was out there doing his head of the army, big kahuna thing, and he sees this guy coming to him on the field, and he has his sword drawn. Now, if you're in Joshua's army and you're coming at him with your sword drawn, that's a big bozo no-no. You don't do that. You're toast if you do that. The other thing is, if it's not somebody from our side, it's probably somebody from the other side, and Joshua might be killed. So Joshua, I don't know how far off he was. I would have been far enough off where I could hopefully outrun that guy before my team came up. "Hey, are you for us or are you against us?" And the answer is no. Allow me to repeat the question. Are you for us or are you against us? No. But I'm the captain of the Lord of hosts. Oh. And in that moment, Joshua has to reckon with who's in front of him. And see the passage up there. Joshua says, what would you have me to do? And he said, this is holy ground. And Joshua worships. So what in the world just happened to Joshua? He, in an Old Testament way, surveyed the cross, took a look at the context of things, and began to live like that. And Joshua walked away from that moment with two powerful truths that I want you to hear and to know. Number one, Joshua understood the authority of the one he was standing before. And number two, he understood the daily presence of the one in authority that was standing there. If you go back to Joshua 1 and verse 9, be strong and courageous, don't be dismayed, don't be fearful. The Lord your God, very personal, is with you always. You know what? That is so phenomenally like the Great Commission. All authority is given to me on heaven and earth. Go therefore, make disciples. Lo, I'm with you always. Are you looking at your life in the context of the cross? As you move forward as a leader, and you are a leader because leadership is about influence, you will influence people. I don't care if it's just your children. What an incredible responsibility to lead them. You want to find out your mistakes at home? Have kids and let them start imitating you. And you'll be like, oh, do I really do that? You know, when my son is sarcastic to my wife, it's a reflection right back at me. I need to be careful. How do I speak? You look at your life in the context of the cross and you realize that there is someone that has authority over you and you've got to make that decision. Joshua had to make that decision. You've got to make that decision. Is he your authority? If he is, then you can take comfort in the fact that he is with you always. He will never leave you, never forsake you. You've got to come to terms with that. I read a few books over the summer. Christmas. You know, that other holiday we had that was like summer because it was 80 degrees. But sometimes you read things in Scripture, you hear things enough in Scripture that you get used to it and you get complacent, which is bad. But I read these books and these things hopped out at me that was like unbelievable. So here are the two books. The Ascent of a Leader. If you're interested in leadership, I highly recommend this as one of the best books. There are lots of good books. But this talks about the capacity ladder, things that we're good at, and growing up that ladder, becoming a success. And often people get to the top of that success ladder and they are so empty and they've lost everything except for their career. And so they talk about the character ladder. You go up these ladders at the same time. You can't live on that ladder and succeed truly without succeeding on the character ladder. So they walk you through that. But there are some things that they say in here that I lost my post-it. I just want to read this, so bear with me, okay? Each life is a work of art, created with living, breathing paints with a will of their own. We actively participate in the process of our own making. We sometimes get glimpses into the master's purpose as we see the brushstrokes in our lives come together. But from day to day, it can be difficult to make sense of the seeming absurdities of our own foibles and troubles. We may question the creator's choice of colors, technique, or materials. Some of us may even question whether God's hand is in it at all, though we long for it to be so. As Bill, one of the authors, once wondered about his own life, did God do any of this, or has it just been me all along? As Bill allowed God and others to see and touch the issues of his heart, he developed genuine humility, the kind nobody likes to brag about. In humility, he gained the grace to choose vulnerability, allowing God and trusted friends to speak truth to him, even to the deepest parts of his life. Bill also gained the grace he needed to align with truth, submitting to the love of others. As he did, instead of viewing himself as a neglected, abandoned son of an alcoholic parent, a new Bill began to emerge from the wreckage. When we come to the end of our capacity pursuits, we must still contend with ourselves. We come into this world with selfish motives. Our motives must change in order to become the kind of person others want to follow. Nobody wants to follow a selfish person. The problem is, just wanting to be an unselfish leader does not make one an unselfish leader. Wanting to be a servant leader doesn't make a leader a servant. To be an unselfish servant, we must become something we cannot be by nature, or our very hearts must be changed. This means we must come to the end of our self-sufficiency, recognize the authority of someone over us. When we do, we can accept our need of grace. At the end of our self-sufficiency, we can find God's sufficiency. At the end of our lonely road of isolation, we can find and take the path to community. Coming to the end of self brings us to reliance upon God, where we gain the motivation we need to climb the character ladder. I read that, and it just resonated with that truth of living under the authority of God and understanding that He's with me always. And I read this book, The Insanity of God. Dr. Burns gave me this for Christmas. It's a story of a missionary. There are missionaries in Kenya, and he began doing relief work in Somalia and was taken aback by the lives and the faith of those under serious persecution. They lost their son, they came back to the States, and then he began to travel around the world, and he's gathered testimonies of people under persecution. It's a story of faith resurrected. It's unbelievable. So here's a little bit from a guy named Dmitry in former Soviet Union. The closest church was like a 3 days walk from where he was, and so he asked his wife, "Do you mind if I start teaching our sons some Bible stuff?" And she'd been praying for that, and so she was overjoyed. Well, it just kept going and growing. Others heard about this, and we'll jump in. He'd started this church or this small group together, and the officials came in. The communist official told Dmitry, "We don't care what you call this, but it looks like church to us. And if you don't stop doing it, bad things are going to happen." When the group grew to 50 people, the authorities made good on their threats. "I got fired from my factory job," Dmitry recounted. "My wife lost her teaching position. My boys were expelled from school." And, he added, little things like that. When the number of people grew to 75, there was no place for everyone to sit. Villagers stood shoulder to shoulder, cheek to cheek, inside the house. They pressed close in around the windows on the outside so they could listen as this man of God led the people of God in worship. Then one night, as Dmitry spoke, the door to his house suddenly violently burst open. An officer and soldiers pushed through the crowd. An officer grabbed Dmitry by the shirt, slapped him rhythmically back and forth across the face, slammed him against the wall, and said in a cold voice, "We have warned you and warned you and warned you. We will not warn you again. If you do not stop this nonsense, this is the least that's going to happen to you." At the next house church service, more than 150 people showed up. The authorities couldn't let this continue, so Dmitry went to jail for 17 years. Indeed, it was a painful story. Dmitry spoke quietly of long, heart-wrenching separation. He spoke of sweat, blood, and tears. He talked about sons growing up without their father in the house. He described a poor, struggling family enduring great hardship. This was not the kind of inspirational testimony that we love to celebrate. This was raw, biblical faith. This was the story of one man who refused to let go of Jesus and refused to stop telling the good news to his family and neighbors. He goes on about what happens in prison, and it's amazing. But here's leadership guys, three guys that have walked with the Lord through leadership responsibilities that say you've got to understand who your authority is, and you've got to understand that He's going to be with you. And here's this man, Dmitry, that said, "I cannot not tell my family about God." He understood the authority that was there, and whatever the soldiers wanted to do, that's up to them, because I'll trust God with the rest. Folks, you have got to live your life surveying the wondrous cross. We're going to learn some truths in there. If you guys want to come on up, you're going to sing this. This is going to be our closing prayer, but you're going to sing these words. Pour contempt on all your pride. Really? Are you willing to do that? It's a daily fight for a lot of us. You don't hold all the authority. You have no reason to hold on to your pride. Jesus has the authority. We're going to sing, "Forbid it, Lord, that I should boast, save in the death of Christ my God. All the vain things that charm me most, I sacrifice them to his blood. That means if you're climbing the capacity ladder, you better get yourself on the character ladder at the same time. Otherwise, you're going to crash and you're going to burn hard, because you have to know who the authority is and that he'll be with you when those hard times come.
We hope you were blessed by this message. Additional audio messages and learning resources are available at www.ciu.edu/bookstore or call 803-807-5263. Messages are also available by podcast at iTunes. CIU is a regionally accredited biblical university offering undergraduate and graduate degree programs. Our purpose is to educate people from a biblical worldview to impact the nations with the message of Christ. Thank you for letting us minister to you today.